Excuse me, schoolboy. they giggle too. Carter and I have a deal with each other. We play a kind of a radio fun game. RFG. This radio fun game consists of when I see his hand going for the microphone, when he's on the air, we have a red button we punch to turn the mic on in the studio. Or when he sees my hand going for the mic, we try just at the split second the microphone goes on to say something interesting, provocative, filthy.
Hey, you know what?
What?
I got a great idea.
What? We could do this show from a nightclub. Now, the people on the air would only hear what's on the air, and that's right and proper. And the people in the nightclub would only hear what's off the air, and that's right and proper. We could kill two birds with one stone.
Well, I would think perhaps a burlesque house would be better.
No, sir.
Or between films at the Gaiety Theater.
Intermission.
Right.
Rise and embrace.
It's 10 minutes past seven. We'll walk down the garden path and find the old dirt dauber and his red coveralls for Christmas. All right.
Hi-ho and ho-ho. Yes, garden lovers. This morning, my annual What to Get Somebody for Christmas Who is a Gardener program. Some of the things for the complete gardener.
That's a darn good idea.
Well, of course it is. First of all, I want to indicate right here that I'm not mentioning brand names because that would constitute something that isn't necessary.
And truck it back up to your house.
Yes,
there'd be a bunch of nicely painted, brand new, shiny garden tools
and
for you.
And diamonds and things.
Right.
So I don't
that
do
would
that.
Be payola, and you'd get 10 years for it.
At least. Right. So if you want further details, I suggest you check with your neighborhood nurseryman or door-to-door gardening salesman.
All right, let's say now that you know someone who is a gardener, but who has been gardening for some time. Do you have a gift that perhaps that gardener might not have in his...
Certainly. First of all, you have to find out how complete a gardener it is. The complete gardener has everything, as you might imagine. A very excellent gift for a very serious gardener, but yet one who doesn't have completely everything, would be a soil test kit. This allows you to determine acidity and so forth of the soil using chemicals. And
that's good.
A little tray of bottles, and you go out there in a white coat, sit down under a shrub, and mix these things together.
Well, you do that.
Well, yes, but I mean, that doesn't determine what the soil is. And I don't wear a white coat. But a soil test kit is very good because it gives you something else to worry about.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, before you just thought it was dirt, but now it's over acid. Or there's not enough humus, or this or that. So you can worry about that. That's an excellent idea. Garden tools in themselves are very difficult to wrap. You can't wrap a rake.
I've seen some, and I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Rake, yeah.
What you can do is to saw the handle down into little bitty pieces and put them on with little, you know, those little...
Oh, yeah, those little...
things. And that
do
way...
Do that well.
They
I like
know.
That. Yeah,
that's just one of the
snappers.
Thousands of non-living imitations.
Like the kudu and the
greater kudu.
Would you listen just for...
No, I'm not going to do the greater kudu.
No, I know you're not. But I know there's one you would do. Or our, and it kind of ties in with our Handyman Garden program.
What's that?
Would you do a live saw?
A live saw.
Which,
would you, what do you want? Band saw, rip saw, hacksaw?
Just a regular rip saw. That is
done. That's done without the aid of anything.
That's really amazing.
That's a darn good idea about the soil test kit.
What's another one?
Well, of course, the living plant is a great gift, and I'm very fond of giving bulbs, all kinds, daffodils, you know.
How do you do that? How do you give a bulb?
Well, first of all, you've got to go in and buy them.
What? But I mean, how do you wrap?
Well, you wrap them up in paper. 10 or 12 or 20 bulbs and put them in a box.
Uh-huh.
Best that way, and then they don't know. And then also be kind enough to include some instructions as to what the dickens they are. Because you buy bulbs in bulk, of course, and you just, people might think they're garlic. Wind up making spaghetti with a daffodil bulb. My, this is kind of lackluster. People would say, you know.
Give us some more ideas.
But I'm very, very good about giving bulbs. Now, we've talked about garden tools and so forth. Of course, the easiest...
Do me a favor.
What is that?
Don't give me any bulbs.
I'm not going to give you any, no, because you don't have any place to grow them. A gift certificate is always...
Even if I did, that I wouldn't want that.
Yes, you would.
No, I wouldn't.
You come over when all of my daffodils are up. In fact, a lot of them are up now. They don't know what's going on. They're up the wrong time of year again.
That sounds like a song, a spring song. You come over when my daffodils are up.
Yes. I could add a line.
Did you hear my idea about gifts?
Huh? No. Bellbrand. What was it?
I'm just trying to communicate with Charlie. I pressed the wrong button. About giving gifts, unusual gifts. I said that why not go out and do something for someone that they haven't done themselves. In other words, let me take you for instance. Do you have a keychain or a watch that doesn't work, that needs fixing, that you've put in a jewelbox somewhere?
Do you think I'm going to give you my watch to have you fix? You mean you'd fix it or you'd have it fixed?
No, I'd take down and have it fixed for you. That would be my Christmas gift for you.
That's a good idea.
Or maybe a lawnmower or a vacuum cleaner at home that you just haven't gotten out of the house to do yourself.
That's a great idea.
Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah. I have a watch that's busted at home.
All right, well, why don't you bring it in and let me get it fixed for you, and that'll be my Christmas gift for you.
No, it costs about $60 to fix it.
Oh. Well, you pay for it, I'll take it in. I'll take it in my time. My time's worth more than $60.
Yeah, you just don't want to brush up against anybody.
Oh, I don't care about money.
Once your eyes get adjusted to the dark,
can you believe that?
It's unbelievable.
Let's sit down and allow that in the city.
No, no. Let's sit down at this table here.
Devil, you.
Not very much. You're doing a heck of a lot right now. Thank you.
You just need a whistle and Dixie.
Wait till we get back to the Des Moines Lions Club. They won't believe this.
Six. I think she's got one more to go. I guess that doesn't mean anything over here.
Well, looking at new cars is always terrific.
Of the oppressed, scourge of the scurrilous.
Masquerading as a mild-mannered dress designer, Peter Lefavre, yet with his lovely model companion, Polly Wog, when called upon by law enforcement officers, with a single reedy, turns into the croaker of crime, Super Frog. And if you remember, in the last episode, Super Frog and Polly Wog, as Raymond Lefavre, Peter Lefavre, and his lovely companion, had taken the Ruinsori 3 tour. And we're going to go to the mountains of the moon to examine, or rather, experience the great Tapioca Grange. But, as fate will have it, they were attacked by natives. And as we found them this morning, they're in a pot.
Wing, Connie Hog Bayou, guide. poor guide, are in a pretty pickle.
Here we are in this large cauldron, and the water is starting to get warmer.
I am so very sorry, Effendi.
You still have your sense of humor?
Boy, I'll tell you one thing, though. We haven't had a bath, and after that dusty trip, this is kind of refreshing, but I don't imagine it's going to stay too refreshing.
Like your name, you're a Pollyanna, Paul. You always think of the bright side. Here we are, going to be boiled again.
Well, in the first place, I'm only 9 years old, and I never had a drink in my life.
Well, this might start you off. To be, you know, boiled and served.
What are we going to do, Super Frog?
Well, we'll wait for the natives to come back. There they are. Let me explain something to Mr. Hodge by you here. Now, Shawnee, this is going to be a tremendous revelation to you, but you probably won't believe this, but Polly and I are going to change into frogs. I beg your pardon. We are going to change into frogs. We have the power to change into frogs, which should certainly... It's quiet here. Certainly, we'll do something to these natives, because they aren't used to people turning into frogs.
That's a good idea, Soup. Let's go.
All right, here we go. Now you stand back into the back of the pot there, Shawnee, because you're still going to be Shawnee. Here we go, Paul. Ready? Ready?
Ready?
Look at the natives. Look at them. They're just... Oh, there we go. Into a frenzy.
Look at them.
Right.
They don't like frog legs.
Look at them run. I've never seen this before.
I have never seen anything like it myself. I will go speak with the natives, my friend.
All right, go speak to the chief. Always head to the chief.
Well, I guess we're out of that mess.
That was a pretty simple one to do. These natives, they have never seen anybody turn into a frog before.
Here comes Shawnee again.
Ah, my friends, you are considered a great god to these people, and they are bringing you maidens for sacrifice.
Maidens for sacrifice.
What are we going to do now?
We've gone through that before. I
think all we need are some bears.
Well,
for our trip to the mountain.
Let's hurt one maiden just a little bit to make them feel good.
Okay.
All right, and then we'll get to do it. Just, you know, maybe an Indian bear, and that's all that's necessary.
Okay.
Design a Christmas card. This has been the routine in the past, that for all of you, I can't send Christmas cards to. You needn't feel pushed out of shape if you sent me one and didn't get one from me, because I didn't send any Christmas cards out. Because I'm a Grinch. My mind is full of spiders and my soul is made of garlic. But I would like to send you a Christmas card over the radio. And this year, my Christmas card would be something like the eggs you get at Easter that you look into. I'm trying to figure out exactly what shape, though. I was thinking of a jolly Santa Claus that you could look into and see a Christmas scene, but then there are a lot of things came up where it didn't work out too well. But we got to get first a basic shape for a Christmas scene. No, Charlie, we can't do that either. A reindeer. Where do you look into a reindeer, you know? So we'll work on it. And I'll give it to you myself. It's 3 minutes until 8 o'clock. I'll give it to you in just a minute. Lord Chesterfield once told his son, "Those whom you can make like themselves better will, I promise you, like you very well." What father ever gave his son a more precious nugget of wisdom? Seize upon this truth as if it were meant for you. Hang this thought high on the most sunlit wall of your inner mind. Use it persistently and until it becomes a normal part of your personality. Men and women, all men and women, are starved for encouragement. Under the warm rain of sincere praise, they blossom in ways that even astonish themselves. Give every person you can whatever self-assurance you can. Don't flatter. Recognize. Help others believe in themselves by believing in them yourself. You'll never know, probably, what a lift you gave them. Yes, indeed. If you can make people like themselves better, they will like you better. I think that's kind of a good thing. just about 8 o'clock. Why is Christmas?
He's my healthy uncle, and I'm Paul Fiedel. Tell me a Christmas story, Uncle Jimmy.
Why, sure, Paula. Once upon a time, many Christmases ago, a little old lady was making a gingerbread man for her husband to eat on Christmas Day. But you see, Paula, she was lonely because they had no children. Oh, how she wished this gingerbread man would come to life. And then, as if by magic, the gingerbread man opened the oven door and started running around the kitchen. Come, look, she cried to her husband. The gingerbread man is alive. Her husband said, they're going to take you away. And he came to look. And sure enough, he saw the gingerbread man, too, running all around the kitchen. So they took them both away.
Boy, oh boy. Ooh, 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 we are in trouble.
We really are. Down the path we go. There's the old gazebo. And in it, the dirt diver himself in his red and white coveralls for Christmas. Let's talk to him, shall we, as we bring you gardening by mail.
Yes, hi-ho, garden lovers. This morning, a kind of a let's-get-organized sort of program.
Yes.
For lack of anything specific, because it's the Christmas season, and who's doing a lot of gardening now? First of all, I'd like to say that the old mailbag is down to about nothing again.
Well, I have a letter that came to both of us, and I could bring it up at this time.
Well, is it important?
Well, it is important. It concerns me.
Oh, well, it's important to you, then.
But you go ahead and get your stuff out.
Yeah, all I wanted to say was, if you have any garden questions, please sure and send them in, and I'll give you an answer on the air, if the question is suitable for broadcast. And there was another point, but I forgot it. So go ahead with your letter.
It's written in a card, and it says, thanks for the laughs. In fact, this is directed mainly to you. I don't know how I got it. It says, thanks for the laughs. We know Don hates Christmas, but couldn't let the holiday pass without saying hello. Now, I'd like to challenge that. As you know, I don't hate Christmas. I hate hypocrisy.
That's right.
That's the only reason I get a little upset at Christmas. I like the whole idea of Christmas is delightful. I got turned on like the Grinch did once by the Who people.
Yeah.
Never mind. Christmas, I just don't like it, Buck.
Well, let me ask you this now. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. Because
no, don't put me on the spot.
No,
sorry,
I don't want to put me on the spot
because I'm alert.
What?
My brain is in good shape. I don't drink, as you
know that. And that's why you're sharp.
Right.
You get up 3 and 4 times a night due to disturbances.
Well, now, for people... For people who didn't hear the earlier part.
I don't want to put you on the spot. That's not
but
my
But you name. Don't say that.
Well,
you get up 3 or 4 times a night. That really makes me sound like an old man.
All right.
Would you explain that?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, hold on just a second.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Explain that, please.
Sure. You had to get your daughter off for a plane very early in the morning. You got up.
Not a plane. Driving.
Driving. Driving north. So you had to get up at 3 o'clock because she doesn't get the alarm clock. And then later...
My alarm went off.
Clock radio went off.
9:30, and
so
I was too tired.
Turned it off again.
And then you rang at 6:15, and so 3 times I got one of those shocker awakenings.
Yeah. Well,
but that's what he meant. I don't get up several times a night.
Okay, now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm trying to solve this problem with myself. How do we make Christmas more meaningful for ourselves and those around us? I mean, I agree.
I hate...
Because it's valuable. It's one of the few times during the year when, theoretically, we are supposed to, A, take stock, B, be nice to people. Now, I know what you're going to say. Why be nice to people in an insincere manner once a year? Why not be rotten all year round? And I agree with that, too. However, I'm
not be nice all year round?
Well, that's true, too. But who is, you know?
Gee, there are a lot of ugly faces when they're set in repose in a frown. You ever looked at that?
Sure.
My face turns me off.
My face is always that way.
Well, now, you've got a very interesting face because of your eyes. People look at you and wonder if perhaps you're stuck.
So, wait a second. Where are you going? You still haven't answered the question. People would possibly sprain their wrist going in. Struck something.
All right, I'll go along with that.
Hey, you know, I was just thumbing through my copy of the West Virginia Oil News this month, D.S., and there's...
Well, I know that the minute you wait for it to come in.
Yes, indeed. Here's a quote by Francis C. Farley, who writes for the West Virginia Oil News.
I know, I've read Francis many times.
And he says, instead of a time of unusual behavior, Christmas is perhaps the only time in the year when people can obey their natural impulse and express their true sentiments without feeling self-conscious and perhaps foolish. Christmas, in short, is about the only chance a man has to be himself. Now, I think that's a point well taken, don't you?
Well, is he intimating that everyone has a giving nature?
Not necessarily.
That normally you'd be embarrassed? Giving gifts to a man, perhaps?
No, I don't think he's...
To a fella?
I don't think he's saying that
fellas
at all.
Giving gifts to fellas?
No, but, all right, now let me ask you this. Have you said Merry Christmas to anybody this year and meant it?
Yes.
Well, all right, would you say Merry Christmas in July to somebody and mean it?
No, I'd say Merry July.
Would you say
Merry July? Merry July.
Would you say...
In fact, I've been arrested 3 times for saying that.
I can well imagine why you would be.
No.
All right, here's another quote.
Let me interject here that I agree with you. Any time that you break something down, the only thing I said was that I don't like Christmas because of the hypocrisy on the land. And any time you break something down, you should have something to replace it. I agree with you. But all I can say is that it's too bad it can't last all the time. The people can't smile at each other in the elevator.
Well, you know the old proverb, a long journey starts with a single step. And it would seem to me that if everybody was nice for 15 minutes once a year, everybody now, can you imagine what would happen?
Be grand. I also found out that very poor people and very, very rich people smile, but that middle rich people don't.
Well, that's true. I go along with that.
It's funny, but it's true.
Well,
I happen to live in a place where there's some very rich people.
I can...
And then there's some middle rich people. I can spot them a mile away.
Can you?
Yeah, the middle rich people have a dour look. You know, they're trying to look rich. The very rich people don't have to do anything. They just smile. Hey, how are you?
Yeah.
You know? And the poor people have nothing to lose.
There are no poor people in your building, I might add.
Oh, well, you run into them once in a while, just going up in the elevator.
Yes, me?
Mr. Case.
Yeah, they hire somebody.
Visit a rich relative.
At Berkeley Farms, we...
Our heroes, of course, will have nothing to do with that sort of stuff, but at Super Frog's suggestion, we join them and we find him saying...
There's nothing in this Cook's Tour book here, Polly, about sacrificing maidens. It's really not as complete as I thought it was.
Well, what are we going to do?
Well, first of all, we can't just turn these maidens away because that would be an insult. I mean,
true.
If you're made a god at 8:15 and at 8:17 you go against the rules, you lose face.
So we got to sacrifice?
No, we don't sacrifice.
What do we do?
I think what we'll do, let's get Shani Hasbayou over here, our guide.
Yes, sir. Avenged.
Johnny, I thought what we'd do is I'd give one of these maidens an Indian burn.
An Indian burn?
That's right. You place...
What is an Indian burn?
Place hand A on wrist. Place hand B next to hand A.
Yes.
Rotate hand A in a clockwise direction.
Oh,
and
would you like to room together next to...
No, thank you very much. And hand B in a counter.
I see what
yes.
you mean.
That's an Indian burn. And you're an Indian and you didn't even know that,
yes.
did you? See?
I think it's a different kind of Indian.
I don't know.
I hope. I'm sort of a different kind of Indian.
Yes,
I'm part Japanese. Sometimes by accident.
Well, you go in and out of it. Let's get a maiden up here.
Okay, here's one.
All right, hello, maiden.
Cute.
Not a bad-looking maiden.
Go ahead and hurt her.
All right, just a simple...
How about another one?
That was... Try once again. I still haven't heard it. There you go. That's good enough. Look at all the natives there.
The natives seem satisfied. Right?
They are. Well...
Now we're off.
They've got a lot of maidens for the next... person they make a god, it's hard to come up with.
We got our bears. Let's go.
Oh, we're going off now to look for the great Tapioca Grange, which is sweeping down the ruins of Ori Mountain.
Here we go.
Funny this is.
Time passes.
Woo-hoo. Well, we've been out here about an hour, according to the clock.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, me too.
We are almost there, where the great tapioca grounds is.
I don't hear any sound or see any movement or look.
You know how many years or how much time has been free of war on our globe? 300 days. In the last 4,000 years, 300 days have been free of war. It's 6 minutes.
Uncle Jack Carney is on every day from 12 to 4. Tell me your favorite story, Uncle Jack.
Once upon a time, a long time ago, at Christmas time, in the middle of the forest, there was a tiny tree that was ugly and scrawny. And the foresters used to march into the forest and chop down trees to take to the city. And the little tree used to say, "Oh, how I wish I could grow up to look like my brother trees, so that I could go to the city, and so that I could be decorated, and so that I could be beautiful." And then one day some carolers came by and saw the little tree, and they said, "This would be cute." And they cut down the little tree and took it to the city and hung popcorn on it and lights and glass decorations and put an angel at the top. And the tree looked at itself in the mirror and said, "There's a crummy way to make a living."
That's it, huh? Boy, oh boy, you ought to be arrested or something. But it's a holiday, Christmas. Merry Christmas. Hey, Jimmy, man. I help you, Uncle, but I'm Paul Friedel. Tell me a Christmas story, Uncle Jimmy.
A Christmas story? You bet. Here's one. Once upon a time, there lived a mean old man named Scrooge who lived all alone in a big mansion. Scrooge didn't believe in Christmas, and he used to yell, "Bah, humbug," out the window at the happy Christmas shoppers below. He said that nothing could change his mind about Christmas. He didn't buy presents for anyone or send them a card, but he kept his money in the bank. But then on Christmas morning, Scrooge awoke and found that he was much richer because his interest had compounded 6%.
That is it? Boy, oh boy. Ooh, 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 we are in trouble. Merry Christmas. Oh, to four. Tell me your favorite story, Uncle Jack.
Once upon a time, a little boy asked Santa Claus for the one thing that he wanted most of all in the whole world, and that was a real live pony. And you know, the little boy lived in an apartment house with an elevator, and Santa never brought him the pony. And the little boy was so disappointed. Every year he went to Santa and he said, "Santa, could I have a pony?" And every year Santa said, "We'll see." And every year the pony didn't come. So one day, the little boy went to see Santa Claus right before Christmas, and he said, "Santa, I still want a pony, but I'm going to buy it for myself now because I'm 38 years old." And he did. And was that elevator operator mad in his apartment house?
Boy, oh boy, you ought to be arrested or something. But it's a holiday, Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
find out that are very much more informed about things than I am. And say anything. You know, you get to a point where you just talk about cotton candy and frou-frou things. Well, about a week ago, I was talking to Carter Smith about the fact that the only Aboriginal tribes ever recorded in the world to not have alcohol was the American Indian. This is why he was done in when he was introduced to alcohol. He had no build-up to it. He was immediately allergic to it. So I get a card. Dear sir, your imperfectly informed idealism has tripped you up again as usual. That's a good way to start a day. On a recent morning, you said that only the American Indians and all of mankind had not developed their own alcoholic brew. This indicates you have never heard of Tiswip, horrible stuff, but kicky, which the Apaches developed in their desert mountains long before they were exposed to civilization. They were reputed to drink large quantities at various celebrations, as after a successful raid. When you remember that Apache means enemy in the Apache language, think how much more hostile a Tiswim-filled Apache was than a sober Apache. It's interesting to note that the Apaches, by and large, have made a better economic adjustment to civilization than their non-drinking Indian neighbors. Perhaps possession of this vice of the white man equipped them to compete more successfully in a white man's world. Well, I didn't know the Apaches had discovered it and used it, but the fact does remain that they are more able to adjust. They haven't had as much trouble as the other Indians with alcohol. So that may be it. But they're the only ones. This guy really had to go far back for that one. It's for all kinds of Gumperson's laws. This is beautiful. If you have just defrosted the refrigerator, some small child will want a cold drink. Any vacuum cleaner would sooner take the nap off a rug than remove white threads from a dark rug. Any kitchen timer will work perfectly until you set it and go to church. No dog will knock a vase over unless it has water in it. An appliance will be damaged in direct proportion to its value. Things fall at right angles, and toast always falls buttered side down. The most important leg of any three-legged stool is the one that's missing. What goes up, goes up. Smile, because tomorrow will be worse. So forth and so on. But I love that. Any dog will knock over. Do you say vase or vase?
Vase.
Yeah, all right. I'll read this for you then. Any dog will knock a vase over, or no dog will knock a vase over unless it has water in it. That's beautiful. And it's so true. That's beautiful. It's
hi-ho, DS. Hi-ho, garden lovers. Just got off the phone, another satisfied listener. Personal answer to a gardening question.
Good.
Mornings.
I just wonder the beauty, what amounts of beauty you must have spread over the last 3 years in the many, many gardens in the Bay Area. The flowers that are bigger and the plants that are greener.
It provides me with a sustenance that I can't explain when I go to bed at night.
Allows you to forget your own garden.
That's right. Forget my own troubles. Onward to today's program, the yes. Consideration of pruning of deciduous trees. Deciduous meaning that the leaves fall off.
Yeah.
And it's time to consider pruning. There are so many different trees and so many different specifics about it. I suggest if you have a tree with all the leaves off, it is either deciduous or dead. Now, in the latter case, nothing can be done.
Just chop it down.
Mouth, you can try mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, but be careful of splinters.
Don't get emotionally.
No, not with a tree. Now, the other kind, the deciduous varieties, need trimming. Many of them do. And they also need a good dormant spray. The dormant spray kills things that are feeding. I believe they feed on these trees while they're dormant. See, that's why it's called a dormant spray.
Sneaky bug.
Sneaky bug. The spray isn't dormant, the tree is. That's why they call it that. There are many good preparations that you can get and standard mixtures, but it's time to really trim it well now because it'll encourage new growth. And many trees, you know, for example, all of the fruit trees, much of the fruit comes on new growth. Similar to fuchsia, which should be trimmed back pretty soon too. New growth is where you get your flowers.
You can trim bushes anytime, can't you?
Yes, sure.
That's no problem.
No, I'm trying. Now there's always exceptions, so I'm trying to think. There are exceptions to any rule in nature.
We certainly know that.
That's the way nature is, and so it's best to check because, of course, it takes a little courage to prune. Here you got these big shears. You've just purchased a house, and you're going out to the annual rite of trimming back your tree, and you're scared, see?
Sure.
It's like your first brain operation.
Oh, I remember mine.
Yeah? No, I'm not talking about having it done. I mean, doing it. See? You're a little nervous.
I don't think I want to talk to you anymore.
You know, Paul, we came over here for a vacation, and right away we're out to stop something, the Tapioca Grange. You know, I just have kind of in my mind the idea that maybe we won't stop it. We'll just look at it.
Well, I don't know, Soup, but I'll tell you something. Anytime that you're a AAA hero, as you are, A-A-A-H, AAA hero, you got to be ready for these things.
I see.
I mean, people growing on you.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of boring saving people after people after people. Nobody ever saves us, you know.
Well, that's the way it is with heroes. Listen.
Wait a second.
While you were talking to Shawnee Hosbayou and getting the natives ready, I was over talking to one of the lesser, and that's what they're called. They live by themselves, but they're very wise.
The lesser.
Mm-hmm.
Lesser and creatures or lesser what?
Eddie Lesser.
Oh,
one of them. Frank Lesser's the other.
Yes, he did Guys and Dolls.
Well,
that's Frank Lesser.
Might have. I mean, to each his own. But anyway,
are we still on the air here?
what I'm trying to say is, he told me that if we cross...
You're only 9 years old.
Yeah, and I never had a drink in my life.
Right.
If we cross this river down the pike here, on the other side is a village. And in this village are some natives. They are neither matriarchal nor patriarchal.
That's interesting.
They are raised by their aunts.
They're raised by their aunts?
Yes, they're called an anti tribe. Hey. And they do a dance called the anti tapioca grunge song.
Do you want to lie down and rest? We've been walking a long time.
I like that. Let's go through the river now.
All right. Are we at the river?
while we were talking all this time.
By golly, we are.
Keep an eye. Keep an eye out for alligators. Be careful. Be careful.
Right. I hope that was an alligator. I really do.
Okay, we made it without getting caught by an alligator.
It was close for a second.
Oh, boy, am I...
Oh! Are we in trouble?
Deep.
He said, the gent who wakes up and finds himself a success hasn't been asleep. And he says, women can instantly see through each other, and it's surprising how little they observe that's pleasant. I can usually judge a fellow by what he laughs at. That's an interesting one, and boy, it's pretty true, too. And he says, and this is so important, I hate careless flattery, the kind that exhausts you in your effort to believe it. So, anyway, that's pretty good stuff. One more here. He says, Jack Dempsey learned in the Firpo fight something that I've observed all my life. The worst opponent you can have is a fellow who has no idea what he'll do.
Not the truth. He said, no matter how rich you are, no matter how poor you are, no matter what color you are or where you come from, we're all 85% the same. It's that 15% that gives us our individuality. But 85% of each one of us is the same as the other one, and this is why we can even get along like we do, which isn't too well, but it's better than most animal species. This is why you can read something like Gumperson's Law, and you know, if a guy sat down and wrote this, he has to have lived the same kind of life you have. I quote some Gumperson's Law. When any mechanical contrivance fails, it will inevitably do so at the most inconvenient possible time. If, in the course of several months, only three worthwhile social events take place, they will all fall on the same evening. If you miss one issue of any magazine, it will be the issue which contained the article, story, or installment you were most anxious to read. Part B, all your friends either missed it, lost it, or threw it out. If in your box of clothespins there is a broken one, it will turn up in every handful of pins you take. That, my friends, is another group of Gumperson's Law, and if you don't think we're all in the same boat after hearing that, you've had it happen to you. Here's a hint for...
Hi-ho, D.S. Hi-ho, garden lover. You still have your cape on.
Yes, I always wear my cape in the winter. I like the way I sweep in and out of rooms.
Two points today. First
like
of all...
Loretta Young.
Go right on. Two announcements this morning. First of all, Mrs. Ruth Gilkey, who is a well-known feature writer in the field of horticulture, will offer a class at the Oakland Evening School during the day, which is a contradiction in terms. But anyway, it's on landscape design, and it meets Wednesday mornings, 9:30 to 11:30.
That sounds spicy.
Well, you talk about boredom, or you talk about getting out to
meet
people.
That's really going to be boring.
No, it is not.
Oh.
This is a way to knock boredom.
Oh, I see.
Get going. Do something. It'll be held at the Diamond Recreation Center, 3860 Hanley Road, and they'll have a Wednesday evening class, too, at the Joaquin Miller School. If you'd like more information, like to learn something about landscape design, call this number later today, 451-5252.
Gee, that's terrific.
Okay.
What else is in the mailbag?
It says here, would
Merry
like...
Merry Christmas.
No, would like to have a gardening question. Don Sherwood would answer it. It's Gumperson's Law gardening question. Here it is. Why does dichondra seem to do rather badly in soil carefully prepared for it, while at the same time it grows all over the cement walks around the outside?
Well, that's it. That's the law itself, you see.
Well,
actually, it would.
Actually, this is Smith's Law.
Oh?
The amount, if you can put a scale, the amount of care, that's one scale, and the health and beauty of the plant. The health and beauty of a plant is in direct reverse proportion to the amount of care and treatment is given.
Right.
And that's usually the way it works. If you take three daffodil bulbs, the first one you leave in the bureau drawer, the second one you throw up into a tree, and the third one you carefully plant, the one in the drawer will do best, the one in the tree second, and the one in the ground will be the one that dies.
Beautiful.
It always works that way.
There's an engineering Gumperson's Law that when you're constructing a huge building, like, you know, the Wells Fargo building downtown or something, the flagpole always gets there first.
Yeah.
Before any of the girders, and is used as scaffolding and lost. It's 17 minutes past 7. CB yesterday, Ronnie Shell, starlet.
Yeah, that's his own quote. He's not really a star yet, but he will be next year. He's going to have his own series.
His own series called Good Morning World. He's going to play the part of a morning disc jockey, of all things. I'm getting out, and I'm going to be able to call him a disc jockey now, see? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Thing is that he bought me a Christmas gift yesterday, and he brought it to the house, and it was a box
with a couple of holes in it, and I was very nervous. Because whenever you see a box with holes in it, you know that there's a reason those holes are in it other than, you know, you've dropped it or you've put your thumb through it by accident. Sure enough, I opened it up, and inside is a land tortoise. They all in his shell, nothing but his feet sticking out. You can see his nose way back in there, see? And I said, gee, that's wonderful. And he said, well, Don, you're a bachelor, you live alone, and this animal fits your life.
Yeah.
And so I immediately called the tortoise Lawrence, after my hero.
Yeah.
Lawrence of Arabia.
You know, kind of a land turtle type place.
And so Larry, I put Larry on the rug and left him there. And by George, half an hour later, he was right there by my foot. Where I put him in the first place.
Oh.
Hadn't moved. They're really a very easy pet to take care of. They don't bark. They only eat twice a week.
They don't scratch the furniture.
They don't scratch the furniture. But finally, when Larry got underway, I do find that land tortoises like to get under things. Sofas and chairs or anything. They don't like to be out in the middle of the rug. They're not gregarious in the least. They're a one-man turtle, you might say, a tortoise. So I gave him to a friend. You wouldn't accept him.
No.
So I gave him to a friend with a garden, and this is the point I wanted to bring up. They are excellent for snail and slug eradication.
Any if, yes, as long as the slugs or snails are crippled because they can outrun him.